Hello and welcome to Sex 2.0. I'm Darren Jones, here with my co-host, sex therapist Ian Kerner, and best-selling author of She Comes First. We talk about everything sex, in and outside the bedroom and beyond the heteromonogamous norm. Here we are on a special edition of Sex 2.0 with our guest, Lorrae Bradbury from Slutty Girl Problems, and we are going to field a few questions from your readers. Welcome, Lorrae.
Thank you so much for having me on.
And of course, I'm here with my co-host, Ian Kerner. Great
hey
to
there.
See you.
Nice to see you too.
Did you have a good holiday break?
Yeah, I did. A lot of family stuff.
Sounds good. And now back to the grind? Or
last week I got viciously attacked by the alt-right. I wrote a piece for CNN about cuckolding. Tucker Carlson and Breitbart all went after. They started calling CNN the cuckold news network, and I've been getting emails about what a degenerate I am and how I should go kill myself. So that's been exciting.
Wow, I bet. So, I mean, has it been exciting in the sense of, which way exciting?
Well, listen, all I did was present it as simply a fantasy couples enjoy, gay couples, heterosexual couples. I said that some couples consensually enjoy engaging in cuckolding, and it was based on a study that had been co-researched and authored by Dan Savage, hence the interest, you know, from CNN and national media. And, I guess people aren't really allowed to just enjoy their fantasies, according to some people.
Wow, well, maybe we need to do a show about that. Our next show can be about cuckolding and,
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Anyway, back to you, Lorrae. We are very excited to have you on here. And you had given us a whole bunch of questions that you and Ian are going to address. Okay, here we go. All right, the first one is, I need some help. My boyfriend and I are great in bed. The only problem is that he can go on forever without coming. I do everything to try and help. He tells me not to worry or get upset, but I want him to climax, too. Any tricks?
Well, I think, I'll jump in on this one. So delayed ejaculation falls into the category of what we call MODs from a sex therapy perspective, male orgasmic disorders, and that would include erectile impairment, early ejaculation or premature ejaculation, and delayed ejaculation, which this questioner is curious about. And so with delayed ejaculation, I think first you want to look at a few different factors. I mean, historically there was not a high level of incidence with delayed ejaculation, but that has become more prevalent recently. And I think the biggest issue is because it's a side effect of a lot of medications, especially SSRIs. So if this person's partner is on Zoloft, Lexapro, Prozac, Paxil, that's going to be a very pertinent side effect from being on an SSRI. So first thing we would need to do is potentially rule out the SSRI, or if the problem is the SSRI or the medication, look at what to do about that. So first we just need to figure out why this partner is having an issue with delayed ejaculation. The other piece of this is that sometimes, it could be delayed ejaculation due to the guy having what we call an idiosyncratic masturbatory style. And that would mean that maybe her partner is a guy who enjoys masturbation and has just gotten used to a kind of pressure and friction with his hand that isn't easily replicated during penis-vagina intercourse. And so if that's the case, he may want to take a masturbation break for a few days to a week. That usually clears it up. He may want to try masturbating with his non-dominant hand. So if he's a righty, potentially masturbating with his left hand, something to kind of change the masturbatory pattern. The other thing that we have to consider is, so he's showing up for sex with an erection, but he's not ejaculating. So what's getting in the way of the ejaculation? And why are we assuming that just because he has an erection, he's completely aroused? He may have physiological aspects of arousal resulting in an erection, but he may not be fully mentally aroused. So he may be dealing with some kind of anxiety or some sort of performance issues. he may not be, this could be a long-term relationship where he's no longer as psychologically aroused in the relationship as he could be. And so there might be, this might be a wake-up call to add some psychological stimulation into the mix so that he's not just physiologically aroused with an erection, but also really psychologically aroused. And that may be enough to get him sort of over the ejaculatory hump.
Wow. Lorraine, what do you have to say about that?
Yeah, that all sounds like amazing feedback for our reader and amazing things to take into account. I would also encourage her to ask him what he likes, maybe watch him masturbate, see if there's a certain place on his penis that he likes to touch. Like you said, a certain grip or speed or pressure that he's using, and that might not be able to be replicated during sex, but they might be able to incorporate it into foreplay, hand jobs or other types of play so that he can get closer to that orgasmic state and then be able to orgasm from other types of sensations. And in addition, incorporating fantasy, just opening up that dialogue and ask him, you know, is there something that really turns him on to think about? Maybe incorporating dirty talk or a hot memory that you guys have together, or maybe a certain act or kink that really turns him on. And then incorporating those hot pieces so that you're getting the physical sensation heightened as well as his mental arousal.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I'm also wondering, could there also be, I mean, I'm curious, Ian, is there, like, these are really young guys that she's talking about too. I mean, is this always, like, due to, like, either being on some kind of medication or, you know, like you said, not being aroused psychologically,
a medication, an idiosyncratic masturbatory style, not being as psychologically aroused as he could be. For some men, especially for young men, sex also has sort of like existential impacts. Is this the first time he's really going from a casual sex sort of model to a relational model? Is this a relationship where there are higher stakes than there have been previously? I mean, certainly when you look at delayed ejaculation classically, before everybody was on medication, we'd often say, oh, this is reflecting some kind of anxiety or ambivalence. This might be a guy who's really worried about getting his partner pregnant, but they're not using condoms, so he's really holding back. Or conversely, this is a person whose partner wants to get pregnant, and he's ambivalent about becoming a father or getting her pregnant. So we could also look at sort of existentially, what does the sex mean to this guy?
Lorraine, anything else you want to add on that one?
I totally agree. He could be having some shameful messages that are coming in from our culture that kind of bring him out of the mood and don't make him feel as present and in the moment as he would want to feel in order to achieve that really orgasmic state. And I think we get a lot of cultural messages that are telling us that, you know, sex isn't healthy or wrong, or what we're doing or what we like isn't healthy or is wrong. And he just could be getting in his own head and putting a lot of pressure on himself to perform and be a great partner and kind of just psyching himself out.
Yeah. I'm curious, do you have many viewers or followers who are guys, or are most of the Slutty Girl Problems subscribers women?
About 75% of our subscribers are women, but we do have a fair amount of guys that come in and ask questions too, and a lot of them are also battling those kind of shame-based messages as well.
Here is number two. My partner and I are in our early 20s and have been together a year. Lately, he's been saying he doesn't feel like having sex. He was a lady killer before I met him, so I don't know if he's just tired of it already, but I know I'm not. Whenever I try to start something, he doesn't feel like it. He's perfect in every other way. What would you suggest I do?
Well, I will take the lead on this one. It kind of sounds like this reader, her partner, seems like he is in the space before even being able to get aroused. He has some kind of physical or mental block that's preventing him from even being interested in sex. So as Ian had mentioned before, I would definitely recommend making sure that there's no medication changes, like an SSRI, that could be chemically influencing his libido. It could also be personal life changes, like losing a job. You know, they're in their early 20s. Maybe they're unsure about what they they want in their careers or having difficulty paying rent. Could be a lot of external things that are just making it so he's not in the mood. But beyond that, it could just be a natural difference in libido. And then they're going to have to figure out a way to meet in the middle so that they can both have their desires met. So I think having an open discussion about what's going on, her partner is going to be the best person to give her an answer as to what's going on in his own head. We can really only speculate. So asking him what's going on in a really non-judgmental way, just as something that you noticed and wanted to bring up, ask what he likes, his fantasies, his desires, maybe incorporating something new. But I really want to emphasize that it's not either partner's fault. I feel like this is something that so many couples go through where they just hit a place of no longer having that same fire and connection like they used to. And it's going to take work to get out of it. And the first step is really to have that open conversation, put all your cards on the table, figure out what's going on, and both be committed to taking the steps to get things back on track.
Ian?
Yeah, I think that's all great, great advice. And as Larae is speaking, it just made me think about how, especially when you're talking about something like desire, it goes up, it goes down. It's kind of a little like the stock market, and the stock market is affected by so many different factors in such a dynamic way. And with sex, and especially with desire, it's really multiply determined, meaning it could be any number of factors or factors in combination with each other. So as a sex therapist, when I'm working with somebody who has low desire, I take what's called a biopsychosocial interpersonal approach. I'm not trying to be too technical here, but I have to look at biological factors. Is this a person on medication? Is there illness? Is it a function of age? I have to look at psychological factors. What's happening with this person's stress and anxiety levels? I have to look at sociological and cultural factors. You know, men get a lot of messages about what it means to be a guy, and men in this society are often supposed to be walking hard-ons, and a lot of men just don't experience desire in the way that a lot of the images about masculinity are presented to men. And of course, you have to look at interpersonal issues. Is this a relationship that is supporting desire and supporting having healthy sex? So I don't think that you know, we can just quickly jump to the solution. It's really more about the curiosity and the investigation. And I will say that there are really two different types of desire. So there's spontaneous desire, which is what we associate with a lot of men being able to be, as she said, a lady killer. She described her boyfriend. I don't know exactly what that means, but I'm assuming in the context of a letter about desire that it means he was always sort of, able to have a lot of desire or something like that. And so one model of desire is spontaneous desire, where people can get interested and aroused in sex very quickly. And a lot of men are in that model. But the other model for desire is responsive, where, you know, desire isn't as spontaneous. It's not a single sexual cue like seeing something sexy or just the thought of sex that gets you ready to go. And there really has to be a period of connection and arousal that leads to the emergence of desire. So maybe with this couple, the model right now is sort of a spontaneous desire model. Let's have sex, or do you want to have sex, or hey, I'm making a move on you and you should be ready to have sex. And, you know, maybe this person has moved from sort of at one time being in a spontaneous desire framework, which is true of a lot of men in longer term relationships, to moving into more of a responsive model. And so now they're going to both need to take more time to be erotic with each other and be sensual and generate arousal. And out of generating that arousal, responsive desire probably can and will emerge. So it's going to be about sort of shifting their model around how they cultivate desire.
Here's a really good one, guys. Help. I really want to give my boyfriend a blowjob. I've done many ones, but usually after 30 minutes of arguing internally to just do it, my ex used to guilt me into giving him head. So I sort of have a fear. How do I get past that?
That's interesting. I wonder what she means by many ones. And I wonder what's really going through her head. I mean, you know, it's funny. We live in a culture that's so focused on sort of intercourse that activities that we would consider outer course, manual stimulation and oral sex, tend to be, can be a little more fraught. And, You know, there are men who love receiving blowjobs. There are some men who actually don't love receiving them. And there are men who love giving cunnilingus and oral sex, and sometimes women who don't like receiving. So I think, you know, I really respect where she's coming from, and I would encourage her to think about what it is that she doesn't like about oral sex. Some women that I talk to worry that, you know, he's going to ejaculate on her face or in her mouth, or that some women have had past experiences with feeling like their throats have been hurt or rammed. And so I just wonder, some women aren't particularly aroused or turned on, and it's where the oral sex is happening in the overall sort of sex script. And, you know, as humans, we all have what's called sort of a disgust reflex. I don't love the term, but it basically, if, you know, we are designed to sort of avoid things that turn us off or disgust us. It's a reflex that designs us from like eating food that's been spoiled or garbage. So it's important that we have this reflex. But one thing that's interesting is in a sexual context, when somebody gets aroused, that arousal can kind of turn off the disgust reflex to a certain extent. So maybe she needs to become a little more interested or a little more eroticized or a little more aroused, maybe through him giving her oral sex. So I would encourage her to think about where the obstacles are, and then to also think about what the solutions are. Not all oral sex has to look like what it looks like in porn. Sometimes oral sex can be approaching a penis like an ice cream cone or a lollipop and just licking it. Sometimes you can put a lot of lubricant on your hand and create a really wet hand job, wet lubricated hand job that you augment with a little bit of oral stimulation. Sometimes you can really focus on combining manual stimulation with oral stimulation and provide a lot of pressure and friction with your hands. So I think that there's a lot of different approaches and ways of giving oral sex. And I like that she's already talked about many ones. I just hope that it feels consensual to her and erotic. And if she's somebody who's really agonizing internally over it, I'd love to see her explore that before feeling a sense of sexual pressure.
Yeah, I really, really agree with that. And I have so much empathy and compassion for this listener, because when she talks about her ex guilting her into giving him head, that means that there really wasn't enthusiastic consent. And I think that her saying guilt is really a gentle way of saying that she was coerced. She felt bad. He put the pressure on her, and it wasn't a happy, consensual sexual experience. And I think it left her with this block where now when she's presented with the possibility of oral sex, it's really triggering that fight, flight, freeze, fear response in her, which can be really scary. And I think that's kind of what she's battling with, is she had this negative experience. How does she process that and overcome that so that she can have more healthy sexual experiences in the future? And with this mini blowjob that she's talking about, I want to encourage her to not feel guilty about these smaller oral sex experiences. Not every oral sex experience has to end in a long blowjob that ends in climax. You can kind of just incorporate it into other types of play, slow down and use your mouth for a few minutes in different ways, maybe teasing ways, maybe more in-depth ways, but it doesn't have to be, you know, the main course. It can be something you do for a few minutes, then when you start to feel a little uncomfortable, back up and give yourself some time to calm down, do some other things, and then go back to it when you're comfortable. I don't want her to feel this pressure that if she commits to go down there for a minute or two, that that's going to be the rest of her night, you know, waiting for this like finale of him completing and her finishing oral sex. It can just be something that they incorporate in a more comfortable way. And I would also want to encourage her to try to separate the coercive experience she had and recognize that that isn't what her future sexual encounters have to be, and that she can build a healthy sense of sexuality for herself and process that and find a way to continue to have healthy sexual experiences without that guilt and shame, because she never should have been in that place to begin. Like, it's not her fault at all. It's so sad that she went through this negative experience, and unfortunately it's something she's going to have to continually work through, but she can overcome that fear through baby steps and processing what happened to her.
You know, Larae, I just have to ask you, you know, in this era of Me Too and what just recently happened, you know, with Aziz Ansari, I'm really interested in your perspective, what's happening with your with women who are in this age group that your demographic is for Slutty Girl Problems. And, you know, you're getting these kinds of questions. And what is the filter now for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're really seeing come to light that sexual assault and coercion really exists on a spectrum. You know, it used to be where we thought that rape was, you know, strangers jumping out of the bushes, and then it turned into date rape. And then, you know, now we're seeing that there's a more nuanced spectrum of things that are bad behavior, whether it's coercing your partner or just continuing to push for that yes, even when you've already gotten a firm no. And I think that this listener is a part of that. You know, there's so many things that, you know, don't qualify as criminal sexual assault by the law, but it doesn't mean that it's not traumatizing and it's not painful and it's not, you know, a terrible moment in a woman or a man's life that they then have to work through. And I hope that this Me Too movement is bringing a ton of awareness in a nuanced way that says, you know, sexuality exists on a spectrum and sexual misbehavior exists on a spectrum. And how do we balance like addressing all of those different issues in a responsible way that gives voices to the victims and is also being fair and not painting everything with a very broad brush.
So Larae, you and I were talking about before the show that you have this fabulous gift guide. There's nobody better than you, I think, to curate that for Valentine's Day. You want to tell our listeners a little bit about it, what you have?
Absolutely. So we pulled together some of the best toys available on the market right now for Valentine's Day, whether you want to buy for yourself, a friend, your partner, anybody in your life that's open-minded and wants to try a new toy for Valentine's Day. We've broken it down into sections based on what they might like, and I would love to share some of our favorite ones with you right now.
Go for it. I want to know.
Sure. So if you want a small, powerful toy that's going to work every time, if you're a person that has a vagina, we would recommend the WeVibe Tango. It is a small, powerful toy from WeVibe that is really wonderful and great for pinpoint stimulation. If you're interested in exploring your G-spot, whether you have yet to find it or are well acquainted with it, definitely the Enjoy Pure Wand is the way to go. This is a stainless steel toy that is heavy. It has two bulbs on each end that are two different sizes, and it is really perfect for targeting that G-spot and giving it a good massage. Now, for those of you that are interested in maybe trying some anal play this holiday season, if you're new to the sensations, we would recommend the Tantus Perfect Plug. This is a small plug that comes in a couple different sizes, from the size of your pinky finger, and really the best way to envision it is, you know, fingers getting a little bit bigger in size. So you can get a set or you can try the smallest size, whatever works for you, and just get used to those sensations and remember to get a high quality water-based lube with that toy.
Go ahead.
I would also want to recommend, if you're interested in some BDSM play, I know 50 Shades of Grey is coming out soon. Love Honey has an amazing 50 Shades of Grey collection, and you can find that on our site as well. They have blindfolds, paddles, restraints, so you can really get into that kind of feisty, hedonistic mood and maybe pair it with the movie.
So in your gift guide, are there pictures of everything and links of where they can buy the products?
Yes, we have pictures of everything. Our most highly recommended shops are committed to body safe products, and we pick out those that have the best deals and sales, so you can be sure that you're getting a great deal on these toys. And you can find that all on our site, sluttygirlproblems.com.
Awesome. So yeah, just say the site once more.
Sure. It is sluttygirlproblems.com.
There you go. Larae Bradbury, publisher and founder of Slutty Girl Problems. Thanks so much for coming on and bringing on the questions from your listeners. Larae, it's always a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much for having me. If any listeners want to learn more about Slutty Girl Problems, they can visit us at sluttygirlproblems.com.
Fantastic. We love your site.
Thank you.
I'm Darren Jones, and that was Sex 2.0, hosted by myself and sex therapist Ian Kerner, recorded at Pro Media Studio in New York City. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to Sex 2.0.